Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The American Players Theater is going to open June 4, 2 days from now, in beautiful Spring Green, Wisconsin. It's a wonderful theater dedicated to the classics, and it's been in existence for many, many years. I remember doing an interview on another radio station when it was just a dream in the mind of three of its founders, and indeed they followed through on their dream, and it's been going ever since 1979, 1980. I can't remember when the first season was, but it is an extraordinary place, and if you haven't been there, I highly recommend that you spend some time, because Spring Green itself has attracted so many artists, and you got Telly Ace and East there, and you've got the beauty of the natural amphitheater and theater that is just classic and so well done. They're going to be doing The Taming of the Shrew this year, The Tempest, Blithe Spirit by Noel Coward, the restoration comedy The Critic of Mice and Men, and then there's also a Touchstone Theater, and we'll talk about what's being performed there. During the course of this hour, we will be speaking with three people who are intimately engaged in giving you wonderful theater. We'll speak with Brenda DeVita, the first part of the program here, who's in her 16th season at American Players Theater. She does season planning, casting, assembling, design teams, hiring directors, and overseeing the day-to-day artistic needs of the theater. She is the associate artistic director, and she received her Bachelor's of Fine Arts from the University of Northern Iowa, attended the Professional Theater Training Program at the University of Delaware. She has played many different roles at American Player Theater, and she lives in Spring Green with her husband and their two children. Later, we'll be speaking with the director of The Taming of the Shrew, one of the plays this summer, and we'll speak with a member of the American Player Theater's core acting company who's playing Kate in The Taming of the Shrew. All hour, please join our conversation. The theater's been around for a long time now, and you may have special memories of plays you've seen there or want to talk about classic theater and how they've been able to keep it alive for so many years now in a fairly remote part of the state. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Brenda, hello.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Brenda. Thank you very much for being with us. You know, I'm so struck. I was thinking yesterday about doing this interview so many years ago with the founders of American Players Theater, and it was a dream that they had, and they found this spot in near Spring Green, and lo and behold, it's still going, and it's even bigger all these years later.
Can you believe it?
Isn't it something?
It's amazing. Every day we kind of say to ourselves, really? Like, I'm not kidding. I walked up there yesterday, and I stood there, and I looked out at the house again, being reminded, you know, just how gorgeous it is. And I thought to myself, those people were geniuses. I mean, to have the foresight to first of all, they looked everywhere, but to stand at the bottom of that hill, the story is that Randall Duchem and his two friends and colleagues, Annie Ojogrosso and Chuck Bright, walked up there, and he stood at the bottom of the amphitheater and spoke, and it was so clear and beautiful. After 45 visits places, they said, this is it.
Isn't that something? But yeah. How have you been able to keep it going for all these years? Because it's not Chicago, it's not Madison, it's not Milwaukee, it's not Minneapolis. It's in a part of the world that's kind of in the middle of the country.
It's in the middle of nowhere.
There you go.
I mean,
yeah,
I'm from Iowa. I know nowhere. So I love the feeling that I can actually say this authentically and sincerely. It's just that special. It's that special, this place. I think what Randy felt, I can't speak for him, but I imagine that what he felt is what most of us that work here and the people that come back here kind of experience, which is, I think that the idea to look at the classics anyway, to spend your life kind of spending your time trying to think about what we're here for, how we live, to try to answer the questions about love and life and mortality and all those things is such a study, right? It's such a lifelong study that mm-hmm. when you couple that with here, under stars, and I mean the most glorious sky, and side of the woods, the nature, the kind of profound feeling, and the stunning originality of where they chose to do this, and the stunning, if we can match that at all, if we can match that at all with our work, it kind of just draws you in. If you're interested in that, if you want to take a look at that, you want to spend time inside of that, I know I'm partial, but I don't know that there's another place on Earth that does it quite like this.
Oh, I'm on my way after that. I'm on my way. You also are able to attract, and maybe it's because of that mission, that people are spending their lives thinking about what we're here for and reading people who are taking on those questions in the most profound ways, that you do attract actors and directors who are top-notch. They do give transcendent performances. Many have.
Well, thank you. I will definitely make sure they hear that you said that. I think that it is that. I think it's kind of interesting. We kind of call it a natural calling. And in no way, shape, or form do I ever want to give anybody the impression that, you know, we know how to do these plays. We know we got the answer. But that the way we do them is the right way, or the way we try to work here. But I do know that it is specific what we do here, that what we're after is something very specific to us. It's kind of our own personal fanaticism, or somebody called us the fanatics in the woods one time. that I do think that it draws, it kind of has a natural culling effect on the people that tend to stick. They tend to have a serious interest in a tiny bit of masochism as well, I have to say, in being challenged to the point of, as my husband's a part of the company here, he says it's a little bit in love with death, or a little bit in love with being defeated, a little bit in love with knowing that you'll never quite get it. And I think that we happen to be fortunate enough that the world is full of artists, and that unfortunate enough that there's not enough work for them all, that we seem to find, and kind of through the process, I think part of my job at times, I joke, is kind of a CIA background check person, because I kind of try to find the people who would be happiest here. Mm-hmm. That's my job, is to try to find people who would be happy here, that feel they can do their best work because they feel supported, and it's the kind of work they want. It's kind of the match, looking for the best match.
Now, you live there. Yes. A lot of the people come in for the summer, but you live there. What's it like to live in the area of Spring Green and to have I'm living smack in the city, right? Smack in the city, so I'm somewhat envious of all the green, and I'd like to have both. But I would imagine you go about your daily life in a much different way, that you're looking at the trees and the flowers and all of that world. Does it affect the art that you do, the work that you do in theater?
I absolutely believe that's true. To kind of cleave the two is impossible for me. I feel like there's a... I will steal this from my very good friend, Tak Kata, who's one of our brilliant designers. He says, as he walks up the hill, he's from New York, L.A., Japan originally, as he walks up the hill, he always says he has to kind of shed his conscious self, his critical conscious self, that little bit of time that we just have to take because it's impossible to get there any other way, that you are forced to leave your car and walk up that hill, that effect that it has on your psyche, that kind of meditation of where you're going and what you're up to, that there's really nothing else. I warn the people who come to work here, and many of them come from large cities where, you know, I say there is no Thai food at 2 a.m, I promise.
Right, right.
That it'll be hard to give up. But that they kind of have to just succumb to the idea that this is what there is. I mean, it's a lovely town, and I love living in Spring Green. And my mother is still shocked to hear me say that as I ran screaming from a small town, you know, as a child. But I love living in Spring Green because of the kind of nourishment it has, the kind of self-awareness it has, that it can afford that for people, and that people are conscious about how and they live. And I think that's kind of what Talk was talking about, kind of letting go of everything else you're doing and kind of spend your time working on the work that is here, because there's not a lot of distractions. And everyone here is kind of up to the same thing. No one here is getting rich or famous in an extraordinary way, you know. They're just really interested in the work, so it isn't. It kind of draws that kind of out of you, and it's a great. We're so blessed. We're just blessed to get to spend our time on something that we find profoundly important or fulfilling. So
Are there many places, give us a sense of classic theater in this country now, Brenda. Are you among the minority of theaters that are devoted to classic theater and you've been able to thrive for so long? Or most, are they growing, these kinds of theaters, or diminishing?
In the 90s, the classical theaters grew and really grew exponentially in this
really?
Country. Yeah, there's a lot of growth in each of the classical theaters that are out there, and there are far, far more than you think there are. A lot of small Shakespeare companies have been devoted, you know, to doing classical works and mostly to Shakespeare. Those are you know, Illinois, everywhere. Everywhere you drive, if you were to Google that, you would be surprised by the hundreds of theaters that are out there that do this work. They're small. A lot of them tend to be small. We're in a different kind of situation that we're around for so long, and we have such a large audience. I think there's only a couple. I think we're the second largest outdoor classical theater in the country. Now that we have two venues, I think that we, you know, over 100,000 people come here every summer. So it's not that there are not many our size that are producing the kind of, you know, size of shows that we do, and certainly not many in rep, which is very different. But sure, Ashland, Oregon is a terrifically successful organization. It has three venues, 60,000 people go there each summer. Utah Shakespeare Festival, Colorado, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and then we love to occasionally get up to Canada and see Stratford. It's fantastic theater. Mm-hmm. So there are models out there that we look to. We're kind of our unique situation though, because we are here in the midst of nature in a different way than most of those places. I mean, we have weather, we have seasons.
You do have weather.
We have a lot, which adds to, we like to make lemonade and say that's what makes it even better, that we like the challenge of all that too. So, but yeah, we're our own people here. We're our own place, but there are definitely places that do what we do.
Yeah. And tell me about the venues that you have now. You have an indoor smaller theater and of course the outdoor venue. What's going on at each place?
Well, we're really excited this is our third season in the indoor space. The outdoor space, like I said, there's just nothing. People use the word magic all the time about the outdoor space, and I can say that when I try not to use the word magic, I end up using the word magic. Mm-hmm. There's just something extraordinary about that space and playing in that space and doing full-scale productions where we can have 23 or 25 actors on stage. That's just an unusual thing to have happen. In the theater today, you know, outside of Broadway or outside of university settings. We're really excited that that's a kind of full-scale scope of production that we can offer people, the kind of costuming that we can offer, that we build all those costumes here, the original artistry that goes into all of that. That's a very different theatrical experience. And then you put it under the stars and you put 1,000 people kind of communing in a way that doesn't happen a lot in the theater. They have an ability to see one another. You know, Kathleen, if you've been here, it's a very different feeling to sit down and kind of be a part of a group that you can acknowledge by looking at them.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right,
you go into a dark theater many times and you read your program and it's very quiet and it's very much, you know, ready to get the show started. And this has a different energy. Do you experience that?
Yes, it does. It's just an extraordinary place. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, and I feel like that kind of like we're in this together kind of thing.
Yes.
Happens on the Hill in a way that doesn't happen anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I think that, and then those size and scale of those productions, the kind of productions we get to do up there, that we get to do, you know, Hamlet and Lear, or The Critic this summer. With The Critic is an incredibly exciting play. It doesn't get produced anywhere, and we get to do it with 23 actors, you know, and the incredibly gorgeous and large-scale costuming and design. So that experience is very different. That theatrical experience is very different. There are plays that we cannot or don't do on the Hill that we have a great passion for, that require kind of the more, in America now, certainly traditional sense of theater. It's an indoor space. It's very, and tend to be smaller spaces. Many spaces that are being built are under 500 seats now. Outdoors up the Hill is 1,148 seats. I mean, that's a big difference. And so to be able to take plays that we think are equally of as import, language, poetic, dense text plays that can be, you know, contemplated in a much more intimate setting, the Touchstone is, it's just so exciting for us to get a chance to do that. For those actors that I love and admire that can work on that space up the Hill for all these years, being, you know, who they are, that they get a chance to be who they are in that smaller, more intimate space, working on O'Neill and Williams and Pinter and hopefully Kushner or Stoppard. You know, I just, it opens up a whole other a group of plays for us, a whole other genre of plays for us.
Brenda DeVita is Associate Artistic Director of the American Players Theater. Their season 2011 opens on June 4 and runs through October 16. We'll give you a rundown of all the classic theater that will be performed and more information as we carry on with the interview. We'll also be speaking with the director of The Taming of the Shrew and with the woman who is playing Kate in the production of The Taming of the Shrew. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We take some of your phone calls now and start with Nancy in Madison. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I thought it would be interesting if you would review the history of how American Players got started. Randall Duck Kim from the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, what his vision was. And originally, it was just going to be Shakespeare plays. And I was wondering at what point you decided to branch out and try to do plays from a wide range of styles.
Oh, great. Thank you, Nancy, for calling. Randall Duck Kim, when he originally came here, the vision of the place was, I know that we've held on to many of the tenets, and like I said, the actual choice of plays that he decided to do to work on classics is definitely, and Shakespeare primarily, will always be a core tenet of our theater. That's where we learn from. I mean, he was the greatest playwright that ever lived, and I think that we believe that if you can do Shakespeare well, if you can unlock those texts and make those things happen, that's what he was after. Randy was a profoundly, he was a profoundly talented actor. And
profoundly
a visionary,
like talented,
said.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and he is still. But here, I know that the audiences here got to see him start out with the idea that it would be uncut Shakespeare and that they perform just a few a year so that they could study them, that the students that came in, they had a idea of having a school. They all did Tai Chi and very many different kinds of different kinds of training in the mornings before they did rehearsal. They rehearsed plays for a very long time. And that's like a dream, and that's what he was looking for. He's looking on how to create a place where these plays could be respected and discovered and explored in a way that very very committed actors with incredible skill set would work on those plays. We just ended up being, and it was long before my time, but from what I understand, ended up being kind of an unsustainable situation financially, the way that they were operating. And I know that that's what prompted a lot of the discussion, and I think work out the idea of moving into other play titles. And I know that while he was here, they certainly did. I mean, they did they did plays while he was here that were not Shakespeare. My Enemy of the People was a play that he was very, very proud of, and I know did. And I think that came out of a need to both expand the work for the actors, but as well expand the experience of the audience and expand the audience. I think that what we know about Shakespeare, it only informs how well we can do Williams, or how well we can do, certainly how well we, as they sat in a rehearsal last night at the Sheridan, there's hardly any more difficult language than the language in that play. And it's hilarious, that production, but that would not be hilarious in the hands of less capable actors with less skills. So the tenets that he, the core values that he had about actors that were skilled and responsible for the language in a way that poetry became necessary for the audience and not that everyone could understand and experience it and kind of have that aha moment with Shakespeare. That was his passion, and that's what we try to continue today.
Thanks, Nancy, for the call. Steve in Madison. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Hi.
I've been going out to Spring Green since at least 1980 and 81, and I will say I have never missed at least one performance during every season.
All right.
Good job. Thank you.
I had just a couple of really short weather anecdotes, and also I had a question. I think that I was at the first performance that was ever rained out.
Oh.
And I couldn't tell you when that was, but I remember it was starting to kind of drizzle, and they came on and they said, you know, we've never been rained out, but just in case, well, we were.
Oh.
And also, I also went out to a performance of Lear, and I also couldn't tell you when this was. But just when they were having the storm on the heath, I swear I heard thunder way off in the distance, and I'm pretty sure it was not a sound effect. I think it was real thunder.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I've heard those stories and have experienced, I don't know, hundreds of those things in my time here that actors continually, that's why people always end up using the word magic. they can't explain those things. We've actually created a book of lore because of the number of stories that have come that where nature and art and audience and, you know, all meet together in a way that you could never. I mean, I know at one point we were doing Iguana. There's a huge storm in Iguana, and he rails at the sky, and as he does so, as Shannon did so, the heavens opened. And that was, I mean, those kind of things, there is no... There's nothing like that on Earth, I don't think, to experience that live.
Why do you keep going every year, Steve?
Well, I was an English major to begin with. And also, and this was part of my question, back in the 60s when I was in high school, I went to the Oregon Shakespearean Festival in Ashland about two or three times. And I wondered, did that theater and its success, and I know it's still going, although I haven't been there for a long time, have anything to do with going with an outdoor theater here?
I don't know exactly what I'm assuming, and because Randy was so well known and so experienced that he absolutely, I'm sure, knew and probably had been to and maybe worked at Oregon. I'm sure that that's the flagship of outdoor theater. But that, if you've never been, I mean, it's an amazing organization, and I'm sure that it probably played some part in this. I'm sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. You. Andrew is next from Mount Horeb. Hi, Andrew.
Hello. I was told that my grandfather had sold the land that is now APT. Mm-hmm. So his farm now borders the back of the stage there. And when I was in elementary school, I went and saw a show, and it was lost on me because I was kind of young. But when I was in high school, I'd be able to sit in my deer stand and catch glimpse of the stage.
I
also enjoyed the show and the music, and I was kind of more interested in observing the deer than harvesting them.
Uh-huh.
So I'd get to observe them, and they'd perk up to it and sometimes sound like they're enjoying the show also.
As long as they don't cross the stage at any given moment, we're good.
But also, I guess at one point some of the staff had approached my grandfather because it butts right behind the stage, and apparently some of the dairy cows were disturbing the show because of the bells around their necks.
Yeah, we had a very interesting, that's a very funny story. One of the actors from New York was working on the stage, and he kept hearing bells. And we were like, I guess we just didn't hear, we didn't really know that they were, and then we started to really listen. And he was so attuned to those bells that we went out, yes, we did. We went out and found your grandfather or whoever has that farm and asked, please, could we remove the bells just during the show, during the months that we're doing shows on the hill?
Oh, my goodness. These stories are absolutely great. And it was okay. The bells were removed for the duration of their performance. Oh, thank you, Andrew, so much for your call. Here's a beautiful email that's come in. We should send this to you so you can put it on your playbill. From Carrie in Wisconsin Dells, I began attending performances a couple times a summer quite a few years ago because Land's End offered tickets to employees. I was entranced and hooked. I've been going back every year since. I consider this place one of the blissful spots in my life. The beauty of the surroundings, the superb performances of such historically important and memorable plays, the nights that the moon is full and the whippoorwills sing are truly sublime. I even was a part of a wonderful evening when the moon was full and I was watching Midsummer Night's Dream on Midsummer's Eve. What an intense memory. I'm still coming back several times each summer, and I've shared this with much loved nieces and family, and am ushering when I can. Everybody who makes this venue possible should be so proud. There's a ring of great endorsement,
wow.
huh?
Thank you.
Yeah, that is very nice. Well, we should talk to you about the lineup for this 2011 season. We never got to that. What's on the stage?
It's funny that you say that. I was just sitting there thinking the same thing. A lot of times we're talking about the location. The plays seem to come in secondary, but it's only because the location is so stunning and original that if we can match that, the plays y'all can quit. The Taming of the Shrew is the first play that opens, and it opens this Saturday. Then it's Blithe Spirit, which is by Noel Coward. Then The Critic by Sheridan. Of Mice and Men, in the later part of the summer in August, will open on the Hill, of course, by Steinbeck. And The Tempest by William Shakespeare. And indoor, we have Glass Menagerie, Crime and Punishment, which is a wonderful three-person adaptation of that novel. It is not the entirety of the novel, just so that everyone knows. The Curate Troy, which is Seamus Heaney, this beautiful poet.
Love Seamus Heaney.
Yeah,
I love
right?
him. Oh, yeah.
It's his adaptation or his translation of his adaptation of Philoctetes. So it's a fantastic, it's a blissful, beautiful, beautiful story, mm. and beautifully written. I am so excited because we don't get to do the Greeks very often here, and that's hard to get a ticket to, so get your tickets now, Kathleen.
Okay, and how do you do all of that? You've got a website, I'm sure.
Yes, AmericanPlayers.org, or you can call our box office at 588-2361. 608-588-2361.
2361 608. And do you have talkback sessions? Do you have
yes.
Do you have ideas on sharing ideas on how people should prepare themselves for the American Players experience?
Well, I think our website is fantastic. We have so much information on our website, and I would really invite people to go there and take advantage of the fact that there's so much material about the plays, about the productions themselves, the actors and directors involved, the director's notes. That's all available on our website. Also, we do talkbacks, and that's indicated on the calendar of events, you know, when the talkbacks are, and actually when the full moons are and such as well.
Oh.
But what we also have is a series called The Bard Talks, which are an hour or an hour and a half long times that people can spend speaking with artists and who work here at APT about the plays this summer and about any given thing about Shakespeare, about Noel Coward. It depends on the subject matter, but that's listed on the website as well, and that starts on July 10th.
All right, and people plan their trips to be there during a full moon.
Oh, yes, they do.
Oh, they
Those
do.
Tickets go quickly, yep.
Oh, isn't that great? You get your ticket when the moon is full. I just love it.
they come with their picnics. They have a picnic. They walk up the hill, and then they sit under the moon. I think it's a good night.
Yes, I'm with you. Thank you, Brenda, so much.
Oh, my.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm a big fan. I appreciate your work.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate yours. Brenda DeVita, in her 16th season at American Players Theater, she does the season planning, casting, assembling design teams, hiring directors, and overseeing the day-to-day artistic needs of the theater. We're going to continue our conversation with people very involved with American Players Theater. As you heard Brenda say, this Saturday is the opening of the whole season, The Taming of the Shrew, and we're delighted to have two people who are intimately involved with presenting The Taming of the Shrew. The director of the production will be with us, and we'll also be speaking with Kate in The Taming of the Shrew. Tim Osel is with us. He is the director of The Taming of the Shrew. Has a very interesting background. It's his second production now for American Players Theater. He last directed last year with As You Like It, and his work appears in many parts of the country. He's done work at the Indiana Rep Theater Center, the Shakespeare Santa Cruz, the Georgia Shakespeare Festival, the Sacramento Theater Company, the Opera Theater of St. Louis, Boston Lyric Opera, Lyric Opera of Kansas City. He's a former associate professor of opera at the University of Kansas Lawrence and is now director of the Opera Workshop at Washington University and adjunct faculty for Webster University's Conservatory of Theater. and resides most of the time in St. Louis, Missouri. And we'll be speaking also in just a few moments with Tracy Michelle Arnold, who's playing Kate in The Taming of the Shrew. We'll start with Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Well, you must have had a great time last year, because here you are again this year.
I did have a great time last year. I had a wonderful time last year.
Yeah. I find your background interesting. You do opera. It looks like you do opera and you do Shakespeare.
I do.
And isn't that something?
They're actually not that far apart.
All right. There is the question.
Well, and I have my opera workshop students do Shakespeare monologues for the opera workshop scenes, because the verse, particularly the verse monologues, take so much breath control that the opera students, and also I need to get the students away from their fear of speaking, because they do have to speak in opera on occasion. And they actually like it. It loosens them up. It gets them connected. It gives them some breath support. And they also, it is a theatrical form, a poetic form, just like singing.
Oh, my. So what kind of breath control do you need to do Shakespeare? And does physical exercise help you to perform Shakespeare?
Absolutely.
Really?
It's a stamina. There's a certain stamina issues. And, for example, Kate's huge speech at the end of the play. It's about a page and a half long. And some of those sentences are lines and lines, verse lines long. So to have a good expansive breath in there, and to know how to do that, how to ride the breath, how to do all of that stuff. I leave that to the voice and text people in terms of vocabulary and all of that. But yes, you do have to have a good, and also this is outdoors, right? So to be a good athlete or to be athletic is a good thing to get you through the night.
Interesting. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Shakespeare. We were talking about the founding of the American Players Theater and how people really thought it was their life's work to study Shakespeare and to ask those questions that we think about, most of us, from time to time, but we don't spend our lives thinking, what are we here for? What is our purpose? Give profound reflections on the human experience.
Yes.
You get to do that with your life, don't you?
I do. And a couple of years ago, I realized that what I've devoted my usefulness to in the world is being a storyteller or enabling actors to tell stories. And I think there's an incredible need still for us to hear stories about the human experience and the human condition. Shakespeare is the master of it. He is the absolute top of the mountain in terms of what it means to be human. And I feel sometimes humbled and many times proud to be able to dig into these texts, and here at American Players to have the caliber of actor to collaborate with on these stories it's actually an amazing thing. And rehearsals, not only do I laugh, but I also cry and am moved, and at the same time stay objective to go, what is the story? Are we telling a clear story? My job is to tell a clear story, is to make sure that the story being told is absolutely as clear as possible. And with a play like The Taming of the Shrew, which is an early play and has a lot of warts, it's not the best written play of Mr. Shakespeare's, and there are some plot problems in the play that I'm not sure an audience recognizes as they're watching the play, but it's kind of my job to make sure that they don't fall out of the play, that they stay in it, and they continue asking questions, and that they see Kate and Petruchio, Lucentio, Bianca, Baptista, all of these people as extremely individual, the way we all are on this planet. And we either come to consensus or we don't. And if we don't come to consensus about the problems or about the crisis or about how to reach balance in the play, why don't those people come to consensus? So people are going to leave The Taming of the Shrew particularly with a lot of questions. I think last year, As You Like It, was a morally easier play to partake in than The Taming of the Shrew.
How do you make, I still have very, very sophisticated friends who find it difficult to watch a Shakespearean play, and it is the language that gets to people, and people get intimidated by it, and they can't understand what's going on here. When Shakespeare is performed very, very well, I think that the words are just, you understand all of it. But it must be a daunting task as a director at the American Players Theater to make certain that the audience understands what's being said, because it's only being said once.
That's right. Well, one, these are incredibly gifted actors, and the core company members here and the returning actors who have been here, they might not be core company people, but some people have been here for 5-6 seasons returning, that they understand the value of text, and the text work that they've accumulated over the years really pays off here. Also, this company's mission statement, it's, I don't know if it's their statement, but certainly their mission is to do language-based plays, and that language and understanding the necessity of a character speaking, that every image that comes out of a character's mouth is necessary. And for this company, I think the reason why audiences love coming to this company and they're not afraid of Shakespeare here, because they know they're going to walk into this theater, they're going to understand every word, they're going to understand why an image is floated by a character, because that's the work we do. It's all about why a character says something and the necessity to say it. Necessity is a huge word here at this company. And I've kind of taken that on as well. This company's taught me a lot as a director in terms of vocabulary and how to get inside Shakespeare. I've done a lot of Shakespeare, but this company, I think, has really raised the bar for me, and I'm so grateful for that.
We'll speak with the actress who is playing Kate in The Taming of the Shrew. She'll join our conversation in just one moment. And we're welcoming more phone calls if you would like to be with us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Or feel free to send an email. That's talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. Tim is the director of Taming of the Shrew, which opens this Saturday at American Players Theater, and we're spending this hour talking about this wonderful place in the Midwest. We'll meet Tracy in just a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tracy Michelle Arnold joins our conversation, a member of American Player Theater's core acting company. She's returning to American Players Theater for her 12th season. We'll talk about some of her favorite roles and favorite Shakespearean roles. She's also worked with many Wisconsin theaters, the Milwaukee Rep, the Madison Rep, the Renaissance, Next Act, the Madison Opera, Milwaukee Chamber Theater, and she's playing Kate, did I say that, in The Taming of the Shrew, which opens on Saturday. Tracy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning, Catherine.
So it's our pleasure, our wonder at being there. What we take from the experience is the director, but it's also you. You have to make the words understandable to us. Is that a daunting task, or is it easy for you now?
Oh, it's never easy.
It's never easy.
Never easy. It may be less difficult now after years of doing it, but it's always beginning work on a Shakespeare play always feels a little bit like a treasure hunt. You know, you dive into a dictionary over and over again to look up words that aren't familiar to you, or to particularly look up, we look in a Shakespeare dictionary as opposed to a regular one, a lexicon is what it's called, to look up what it may have meant when Shakespeare wrote it. Because some words have a different meaning to us now than they did then. And so if we find out that a word has a different meaning, then we'll throw a different spin on it and try to make you understand that we mean a different thing than what your ear may hear. And if we don't feel like we can accomplish that, then we might think about changing the word. But generally, we try to make you hear what Shakespeare wanted you to hear.
So there's a lot of research that goes into doing a play.
Yes, it's a lot like school. I was listening to the conversation you were having with Tim and talking about continued exploration about life. And I do think that is a common thread among theater artists, probably among artists in general, is that we sort of never stop wanting to learn and grow. I think it's one of the reasons I so crave for the country to be more supportive of the arts. I'm a relatively new mother. I have a 2.5-year-old son.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And my son, I watch him every day learn something new. It's so fascinating to watch a child.
Yes.
Literally do something for the first time, almost on a daily basis, or learn a new word and start using it. And the wonderful thing about this particular kind of work, because it is difficult and we do have to really work hard at making it clear, is that we can't ever stop learning. We can't ever lean back and rest on our laurels if we want you to really hear the story and really understand what we're, the message we're trying to get across. So it's a constant learning process. And so there's a bit of a child inside of all of us, you know, that's still hungry to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that to be everyone's experience in the world. Honestly, it's such a wonderful feeling to thirst for knowledge and to actively seek it. You know, it gives you a drive for life, unlike anything else. And I never really thought about any of that until I became a parent and watched how happy my son is just to wake up in the morning and sort of find out something new in the day. And I thought, oh, we have that in common. You know, when I go to work, I know that I'm going to be confronted with something new, something that I don't know, that I may learn. And it's not ever just from one source. It may not be from the text. It may be from my director. It may be from a fellow actor. It may be from a lighting designer. I never know where it's going to come from. But it's a sort of a constant inspiration to go to work.
And I'll bet more and more is coming from your 2.5-year-old.
Yes, it's true. Yes.
Yes. I was going to add that the director-actor relationship and what we say to each other in rehearsals, and that we're trying to collaborate that way, what we think the story is, because even though we might know what the text means, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're together on what is the story of that text at that given moment. Psychologically, where is that character, and what's the journey of these people? And we learned a lot on this play, and we have certainly curved some original thinking around to some totally different thinking about this play. The sun and the moon scene, for example, and what happens in the scene with the tailor. Those were tough, especially the tailor scene, was a really tough nut to crack. And so we're also listening to each other to go, well, I think it could be this, I think it could be that, and then trying to interpret what do you mean by that story? What do you mean when you say those words to me? So, and Tracy and I haven't worked with each other. Some of the others I'd worked with last year, but there's a whole handful of people in this cast that are new. And to collaborate with someone new, you need to be respectful and you need to honor their process at the same time that you're trying to feed their process.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. You said earlier, Tim, that this is not Shakespeare's best written play. What about the character he writes in Kate? Is it a fully formed character that's easy to work with, or is it perhaps not the most well-rounded character, and you have to get in there and find as much as you can? So
well,
I'm wondering how
to answer that.
Yeah, I would like to say that it's so interesting that we're talking about learning in life while we're living, learning while we're living. And I do think that Kate is a prime example of this.
Yeah.
I think the play itself may be a little bumpy and a little tricky, but Kate, I'm delighted to play her because she has a very clear arc. She really takes a big journey in this play.
Yeah.
She starts as one person, and she truly goes through a transformation because of the relationship she forges with Petruchio throughout the play, and comes out on the other side a different person, a person not for the worse, a person who's, shall we say, whose worldview is broadened.
Yes,
a lot of people,
happier.
I think, can look at this play and very quickly decide that her worldview is narrowed, that she is being squelched. And I think it's completely the opposite.
You say happier, Tim? She's happier?
I do. I think she's much happier at the end of the play than she was at the beginning of the play.
I agree.
She's found a true partner, a true life partner, and she's found love and joy.
I would love for Tim to speak to his idea. If anyone listening knows the final speech in the play, it has always troubled me. Before I studied this play with Tim and really delved into it, I always wondered about the final speech. And Tim had some ideas on that, and that's how we really started the rehearsal process. And I would love for Tim to talk about what his ideas are about why she says what she says.
Okay.
Well, and Tim is in on this, because I have a terrible memory, so I don't always remember what I say. But I do think that that she is speaking from her personal, individualistic heart, that she loves him, that she has learned, as Tracy says, she has learned, and what, even though he says, tell those other two wives what it means to be a dutiful wife, what your duty is, she really is speaking to herself and to Petruchio about how he has helped her find her beauty, her inner beauty, to find her soul, to find her usefulness in this world, and to find her compatibility in this world. The thing that we've been working on with this speech is that I want her to feel as an equal partner with this speech, and that even though she may use images such as the subject and the prince, that without a subject, there is no prince. Without farmers in the field growing crops, there is no army, because there is no food for them to be fed. So it feels to me that the husband-wife relationship in this play is absolutely equal at the end of this. And we've been working pretty hard on that.
That's
Tracy, what else?
Now, let's go to some phone calls, because we're almost short on time, and we have a couple of people at least who would like to speak with you. Frank in Milwaukee, hi.
Oh, I first of all, I just wanted to thank you for this program. And I'm not a person who is really well versed in the arts, but having had the opportunity to go to APT back in the mid to late '80s, and you know, pretty much every year since, I'm just really grateful. We have a wonderful treasure in the APT, and I have laughed so hard that my sides have hurt listening to the verbal gymnastics and then just gaining a true appreciation for what a genius Shakespeare was, and then also the professionalism and the commitment, all the subtlety and nuance, and the enthusiasm and the passion with which they embrace the productions. And Tracy Arnold, unbelievably, what a wonderful talent. Jim DeVita as well. I just think back to so many great experiences I've had there, and just wanted to thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you so much, Frank, for the call. Tracy, you want to respond first?
Well, I just want to thank Frank and everyone that comes to American Players Theater. I mean, I can say a very personal thank you to you, to those people, because they make my life my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not kidding. You know, I'm able to feed my child and still do what I believe in and love passionately because of people like Frank, because they choose to come to the theater and spend their entertainment dollars at APT. So thank you very much. I'm truly humbled by that.
And we have time for maybe one more call. Laura in Manitowoc. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm embarrassed to say I've lived in Wisconsin most of my life, and I have never been to the APT. And family members have tried to convince me to go, and for one reason or another, I just never did. But this year, I received your beautiful mailing, and it, you know, very nicely produced. I was very compelled, and still that didn't kind of get me up off the couch. But I'll tell you, you've convinced me after listening to this. Now, my question is, I have a daughter who's 13. She's, I believe she would be interested in going, but my only concern is that she would maybe not understand Shakespeare. Mm. And I did listen to the segment about that.
All right, Laura, I need to just, we're almost out of time. In 20 seconds, how can her daughter get prepared? Tim?
I would read a synopsis of it before, but I don't think you'd have to do anything else than that. For Taming of the Shrew, I think a 13-year-old would understand what is going on in the play for the most part. But there's a synopsis in the program, or just go online and read the story once through. You don't have to read the play, just read a synopsis of it, the plot synopsis, and you'll be fine.
And take the opportunity to have this adventure with your daughter.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be a great adventure.
The two of you together will, when you're at intermission and on your drive back to Manitowoc, will say, now, what did you think this meant?
Yes.
And what did you think about that?
Yes.
And that's, honestly, that's one of the main reasons we do this work.
Thank you both.
Those conversations.
Thank you both so much. Looking forward to seeing you this summer. Thank you.
Thank you.
American Players Theater this hour, and our guest this half hour, Tim Osel, is the director of The Taming of the Shrew, and Tracy Michelle Arnold, a member of the core acting company, playing Kate. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, Christy Peace for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios, and thanks for all of your calls and for listening.